This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is 90-year-old Navy veteran Neil Green, a longtime Southern California resident. He now lives in the Bay Area. He grew up in eastern Kansas and joined the Navy before graduating high school. He was in before the war, served on two different destroyers, fighting first against the Germans and their infamous U-boats, and then in the Pacific against the Japanese. Neil was part of the original crew of the destroyer Haywood L. Edwards, involved in the battles of Saipan, Tinian, Peleliu, Surigao Strait, Luzon, and when we left off, he described seeing the stars and stripes rippling in the wind atop Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima. That wasn't the last battle you were at with the Edwards. Okinawa, of course, was after that, and it was at Okinawa that that kamikaze threat really intensified.
That was the worst part of the war for me. We lost a lot of our own ships, and there was an island called Karamareta where we sent these ships that were damaged, too damaged to fight. We'd send them back, and it was just full of bomb ships. As a matter of fact, when we run out of ammunition, we'd go and tie up to one of those ships and go down in its hold and take their ammunition out. We'd be working right next to a place where sailors were still entrapped, and you know, we're dead sailors in the compartments that in the watertight integrity of the ship, they were still there. I mean, that's how brutal it was, and the ships were just, we would have a ship completely covered with anti-aircraft fire, and it would still come down and hit the ship that was aiming at. I suppose if I threw a rock and you shot me, the rock would still go where I aimed it before I was killed. And the pilots must have been already dead, but we'd have it from when we'd take it under fire all the way down, and it would come across our bow and go in. I remember the Lutz, I think it was, our sister ship was blown up that way. We fired it all the way down across our bow, and it went right into that ship, just like a big hand pressing it. Just blew right up. That they could do a terrible damage with those things.
Did you ever think that your ship was going to get hit by one of those?
Let me tell you, I was on the front of the ship, the bow of the ship. I was on the second battery there, and I could see a plane coming right down at us. And I said, well, guys, those guys in the back, they're my shipmates are going to get it because he's coming right at us. I thought of them. I didn't think somehow or other that I protected myself by not thinking they were coming after me. They were coming after my shipmates back behind the ship. That was just kind of I don't know if other people felt that way or not, but it was a matter of preservation. You had to believe that you were going to get out of it, but you knew in the end you might. And there again, the motive of patriotism comes into effect. If I go now, my grandmother with whom I was raised would have a star in her window and everybody'd be proud of her. And it was it's kind of silly now, but it wasn't silly to us at that time. It was a pride they don't see today.
Well, and you didn't know what else was in store for you in your life. And I'm sure had you known all the things that you've experienced since, maybe your perspective would have been different too. When the war was over, and I don't want to skip over anything, feel free to inject any other close calls you had or moments that stick out in your memory. But when you heard that the Japanese had surrendered, what kind of day was that for you and all those guys on your ship?
Well, our ship was in Guam, and we were getting new guns. Our guns were worn out from all of the shelling we had done. We're getting new main batteries, and we got underway shortly after that. It was a delightful day. I can remember, and I can't remember what island it was in. I think it was in the Philippines when Roosevelt died. All the ships that were all bombing the island, we're all firing at the island, and all the ships on command stopped firing. And then they all loaded and fired on a given radio signal. I couldn't tell you what it was because I could only, like everyone else, I could only hear our own batteries going off, but it must have been a great thing for the Japanese to hear that kind of a roar from all of those ships with the big 16-inch battleship guns going off and at the same time, it was quite spectacular.
And symbolic, I guess, as well, huh?
Yes, it was. And there again, love for country and the president, and there was no political animosity that you heard of out there. Everybody was an American. Everybody was proud of being what they were and doing what they had to do. But nevertheless, there were lots of bodies that didn't make it back, and I don't consider myself a hero. I offered myself. That's the way I figured. I offered myself, and nobody took me up on it. And but the guys that were out there slugging around with a gun and standing tall while they were charging, you know, those are the guys that I consider heroes. I was a hero in that. Then I said, "Here I am. If you need me, take me." But I didn't want them to.
Well, I don't know if there's a more heroic choice. And every veteran I've ever had on this show, regardless of how many decorations he has, whatever citations he received, insists that he's not a hero, that the real heroes are the 400,000 Americans who didn't come home. But I contend that the rest of you were willing to be one of those, as you just stated, and that makes it a pretty heroic choice. And you said doing what you had to do, and you nearly had to invade Japan. That's what you guys were getting ready to do, to participate, at least shelling those shores as the troops landed. So it must have been a relief to you guys that this war was now over and you'd get to come home.
Well, I'm convinced if they hadn't stopped it, I wouldn't be here today, because we didn't have much of a chance of getting out of there. You know, that they were fanatical people and they were willing to die. Everybody ashore, civilians and military, was willing to die to protect their land, and we would have had a lot of casualties. So I think probably I was saved, and as many others, but by the ending of the war.
So in other words, the use of the atomic bomb, all the lives it claimed, it saved exponentially more in American lives and Japanese lives, and you're one of those that it saved. Is that how you feel?
I feel that way. I feel that not only, like you said, not only the Americans, but Japanese would have come out with the suicide runs, and the women and children would be, the women would be pulling grenades out of their hair and blowing themselves up and blowing us up. It would have been a last desperate move, and I think it would have been too horrible to even contemplate. I think it was a necessary thing to do.
And to hear you say too horrible to contemplate after the things we've contemplated with you that you've shared that you did see, that adds some gravity to that. So when you get back home to the States, I mean, here you join the Navy at 17, and now you're coming out of the Navy, I guess in 1945, you would have been, what, 22 years old? That's a long 5 years, and you grew up quite a bit, I imagine. What was your perspective coming home?
At that time, they were letting you get your discharge wherever you were, and that you could, they would pay you for the train fare back to where you enjoyed. So I had a girlfriend a Kansas girlfriend in Los Angeles. So I came down to see her. The shipping over money and all of that, and I didn't. There weren't any jobs that we get right after the war. There wasn't anything to do. I just took it as it came. I entered business college and to start a career and just relished the life I was leading. It was good. And I finally married this girl that we were in high school together back in Kansas. She'd come back to visit every summer. So that's what got me to California. I got discharged out here. Instead of going home, I just stayed, and there wasn't much of Columbus to entice me back. So I've been here since 1945.
Yeah, and I know we don't have time to get into all of it, but a long, long career in the field of art. And your wife was an accomplished painter. You rub shoulders with many famous painters. Where did the art thing come from for you, the love of art? Was it something that you had doodled as a kid or got into in the Navy, or where did that come from?
I married the boss's daughter, actually, and she was the artist, and I was the merchant, and that's how it turned out. And we bought the business from him, and we were there for 40 years, I guess. She was the artist. She painted all the time. That was what she loved to do. It was a good career.
You've talked about your patriotism, the way you felt then, the way you feel now. You have grandchildren who weren't alive during World War II. You have children who weren't alive when all this was going on. What do you want people who didn't experience all of that to know about what you and those millions of Americans like you did, and why it needs to be remembered today?
Well, I think patriotism is what will lead us to a better life. If you've got to have pride in yourself and your neighbors, you got to take care of each other. The world can be a lot different than it is now through the belief in something. To me, they're just too materialistic now. They don't have faith in things. It scares me to think what the world can become if it goes the way it's going. And I think to have faith in things, and I get wound up.
What do you put your faith in?
I was raised a Christian, and I defend my... I can't say that I'm a great practicer of it, but I believe and I believe in the hereafter, and I believe that I would like to see people be more in tune with the people they're living with here on this earth and enjoying it. There's a lot of joy to be had in that, but they're not they're too much at each other's throats today, too politicalized, and that disturbs me. I have no idea how to solve it, but I love America. I think it's the best place to live, and I think it's paradise on earth for other people, but people don't have faith in what I think they ought to have faith for. They have faith in, especially on the coast, on the two coasts. The Midwest is different. They're a little bit different back there.
My whole thing is, if you live something, then you're qualified to talk about it. And what you experienced, we've listened to today, and it's powerful. And so how you see it, I think, is important for us to understand, too. And you said that your faith was in God. You also said that you offered yourself up, willing to die for your country, and your country didn't take you up on it. When you think back on that now and you think about your late wife and your children and grandchildren and all the fine folks that you've encountered over the years, do you feel that that God had a plan for you? That's why you didn't die? Do you feel like he was protecting you during the war, or is that too out there of an idea?
No, I believe it. I believe that I was protected. I ran across somebody the other day who commented that it was a couple of people that were asking me for directions, and I my age came up, 90 years old, and I said, I guess I've been lucky. And she put her hand on my shoulder and said, you're not lucky, you're blessed. And I believed her. I have hopes for my grandchildren, and I dread that they might have to see the same thing I said that did, or something worse. I looked in their little angelic faces, and I think if I could protect you from what I have seen, though it hasn't been that horrible. The battle was a lot more immediate to the people who are standing with a gun in the hand, looking at a guy with a gun in the hand. The Navy was a little bit different, but you were still vulnerable to being killed. And I'd like to spare them, and I've told my children that I want you to be a part of America, a useful part of the society you're living in.
What's the biggest thing the Navy taught you?
I guess how to be a man. I didn't have a father. I was raised by a grandmother on the farm, and it was kind of a lonely life. I guess how to be a man. It took me a little while to learn that, how to be a sailor man. I mean, you know, it was brutal sometimes, but it was self-reliance. I had to look after myself, and I think that's helped for me. I've worked hard all my life, and I've accomplished more than I ever thought I would with God's help again. I'm fairly secure now and happy with what I've done. Things are looking up, and I can face whatever future I have, knowing that I've done what I could do for my children and my friends' children and my associates' children, and trying to make the world better. And I hope they continue that fight.
Well, I just want to say thank you for serving our country, and thank you for sharing some of your experiences and your perspectives with us. Is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think it's important we know?
There isn't anything important except the survival of the country as I know it, as I knew it then. Probably wasn't perfect, but to me it was. It was worth fighting for, and I fought for it, and I'm proud that I did.
As well you should be. Neil Green has been our guest today. You'll find photos of him then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And I'll be back next week with another Navy veteran who survived 15 hours floating in the water when his ship was sunk. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.